Now, this podcast was born from the idea that more positivity, more fun is needed in Australian football. And we've got plenty of that today. We've got some quizzes. We've got the reasons to be excited about some A-League teams. And stick around right till the end of the show, because at the end, we've got a season preview song that is just going to blow Dua Lipa and blow Harry Styles right out of the water. But first, before all that, an issue that all of us agreed had to be discussed right off the bat. Because what happened off the pitch at the Australia Cup final was disappointing, it was frustrating, and for many, it was heartbreaking. So before we get into all the fun stuff, we'll start on a serious note. On today's episode, with Kick 360 of the Golden Generation. Second episode, we're still here. We haven't been cancelled or anything. The Golden Generation's back. Thank you very, very much for joining us. Of course, a panel today. Lots of changes. The only guy that keeps his spot that wasn't dropped by the head coach this week is Tom Williams. Tom, how are you going?
Very well, thanks, Harper. Glad to be back and welcome to our new guests, who I'm sure you'll introduce very shortly.
Oh, look, the first guy I'll introduce, you've probably seen him in the logo of the show. You've seen him all around Twitter. He's a lovely, lovely face and he's top quality tweeting. My personal favourite Australian football media, Lynch, Gerald Lynch. How are you, mate?
Harp, I'm very good, mate. It's good to finally get on the show and yeah, looking forward to today's episode.
Thanks very much for joining us, mate. And we had a late out, so this is the guy you always call, the expert in just about everything, our favourite Bulgarian, Petr Petrov. Thank you very much for joining us, Petr.
Thanks for having me. Really, really good to be the first international panellist on the show.
All right, mate. Always an absolute treat talking to you. Thanks very much for coming on. And we do like to have a very fun, upbeat, lighthearted tone all throughout all of our episodes here at the Golden Generation, or at least the first time we had. But this tone that we'll start with today is one of sadness and frustration, I think. Tom, you wrote an article on Kick 360, a cracking article at that, about what happened off the pitch in the stands at the Australia Cup final, MacArthur against Sydney United. First up, can you just recap what happened for the one person who doesn't know, and tell us what you said in your article?
Well, it essentially started with a segment of the Sydney United fans, in my opinion, a very large segment of the Sydney United fans, booing and sort of jeering during the Welcome to Country proceedings and the national anthem. There's a bit of, shall we say, conjecture over whether they were actually booing the Welcome to Country. I feel like a lot of that's sort of irrelevant. I feel like that stuff is actually the secondary issue at play here, because the stuff that eventuated after was the most quantifiably sickening stuff. It was the fact that during the game there were people within the Sydney United supporter base behind the goals in particular performing Nazi salutes and also singing a chant, Zadom Spremni, which is which finds its roots in the sort of conflict that occurred during World War II and was a slogan for the Ustasha, which was an organization, a fascist organization that oversaw the creation of the independent state of Croatia in 1941 under the lead of Ante Pavelic, and it existed for 4 years. And during that four-year time period, they presided over the extermination of over 300,000 Serbs, 30,000 Jews, countless other people, and these are only sort of rough estimates. It could very well be, could very well have been even more. So it was a very, very sickening day for Australian football, and I think it tainted the actual cup itself, which has been a really good competition. It was great to see an NPL club make it all the way to the final, but it was just a complete stain on the game, the fact that this occurred. So my article basically just touched on how a lot of it went into details around the historical context surrounding Croatian Australian support for the Ustasha, why the Croatian diaspora across the world sort of revere the Ustasha in a different light to Croatians who still remain in Croatia. For example, Josip Šimunić, born in Australia, played for the Croatian national team, was banned for 10 matches for FIFA in 2013 for leading this exact chant. There's been other circumstances around the country, really, where Croatian clubs still have portraits of these war criminals, people that committed genocide and outwardly express their fascist beliefs. Sort of, and there's even, if you go to the Croatia House in Melbourne, there's a statue of Ante Pavlic, the guy that led the Ustasha. So it was, it mainly just goes into that detail around why these people sort of feel that their Croatian identity is so closely associated with an organization that outwardly expresses itself as fascist. And I think it's really important that we try and kick this out of our game as soon as possible and ensure that it doesn't threaten to stain what will be a really significant moment for the history of Australian football when the National Second Division comes into place.
How do you think we get rid of this from, well, specifically the culture of Sydney United? Because as you kind of touched on, they're founded on this identity as a Croatian club. So how do we remove this stain from our game? It's not an easy thing.
I don't think it's actually possible. That's my opinion. It's hard to explain, but the actual support for the Ustasha and the support for this regime is so irreconcilably associated with Croatian identity and Croatian culture for this segment of people that they're not going to change. This is the way that they've been brought up because their descendants, their father, their grandfather, were people that fled the totalitarian socialist regime of Yugoslavia and are therefore feel obliged to revere and to prop up the likes of Ante Pavlic, who gave Croatia its first semblance of independence. So, because for hundreds of years before that, they were ruled by other entities. They never had that independence. They never had that sovereignty as a state to feel all unified by under the banner of Croatia. So I think it's irreversible. I think the actual thing that the FA have got to do now is ensure that these segments of fans can't make their way into the National Second Division, because it has to ask itself what we actually want from these fans and what we want from people supporting our game. I think the most important value is inclusion, because there's so many people who enjoy football, were at the game, were watching it on telly and were repulsed by those actions, and I wouldn't want it to happen again. And I think just for context, like I work at a high school, as I've mentioned before, and there's a kid in year seven who told me that his grandpa, his wallpaper on his iPhone is a photo of Ante Pavlic, because this is what these people see as Croatian identity, that supporting this regime is Croatian identity because it's what gave them their independence. So it runs really deep and it's really complex, but I think it's really important that everyone knows about it and doesn't shy away from it and pretend that it doesn't exist, because these are things that as a game and as a culture we've got to face head on and say, nah, that's not on, and really try and stamp it out.
It's so hard to just kind of wrap your hands around the game and try to stamp it out of the game without stamping it out of society, isn't it? Because, like, people always say the great thing about football is the fact that the great thing about sport is that it's a microcosm of society, wherever you are in the world. And one of the great things about football in Australia especially is the diversity it has across teams, across fans, across players, across everything. But with that kind of diversity, obviously you get great things. You get diversity of culture, diversity of political opinion, diversity of just about everything. But sometimes the diversity of political opinion just stretches a bit too far, doesn't it? And this is a political opinion that I think all of us agree, at least, we don't want it in our game. But it's just impossible to take that little part, pick it up and remove it from the game, because you'd have to remove it from society for that to happen. Gerald, we haven't come to you yet. Would you like to add anything on this issue?
No, not really. I think Tom got across all of it. Obviously, it's something that is a real part of society and something that we would love to get rid of in our game, and really obviously tarnished what was a great final and a great Australia Cup run for Sydney United especially. It is what it is, and hopefully the people that are at fault here are dealt with properly, and we don't see it happen again anytime soon.
So dealt with properly. Well, what is dealt with properly for you?
Well, Harper, I think if you were to look at especially the people that were putting up Nazi salutes and that sort of thing, definitely need to be given life bans, I think, from football in this country. I just think anything less than that is a slap on the wrist. Like, it's 2022 and we don't tolerate that sort of thing anywhere. If you do that out in public, you're charged. So I don't think it should be any different at the football. And I mean, yeah, if you let them back in 5 years, 10 years, whatever, it's just saying like you can do it again at some point, because it's, I think, anything less than a life ban or a really long ban wouldn't be enough.
It's obviously, I agree with the sentiment 100%. It's just so hard to draw the line. Like, actions like that, like overt kind of fascist symbols like the Nazi salute or certain chants or whatever, I agree, lifetime ban. But then you have people who aren't doing the salutes but might like have way worse views than the people who are doing the salutes, but because they don't have those specific overt actions, you don't know what to do with them. But I think we should move on to the on-field, unless anyone else wants to say anything about what happened in the stands. Okay, move on to the on-field. So, Peter, we'll get to you. We're 10 minutes in, and we'll let you have your first comment of the day. So, MacArthur, obviously, getting up over Sydney United. Give us your little breakdown of what happened on the field on Saturday night.
Yeah, I guess we should start with the main talking point, which was obviously Daniel Arzani. I don't want to make it like all about him or about this, but I have a problem with some people's perceptions of Arzani. And yes, he had a great game. Yes, he's an entertaining player, definitely an entertaining watch almost every time he's fit and firing. But Australian football fans just like, they just love getting carried away, don't they?
Yeah.
I feel like with Arzani, he's either overrated or underrated. Half of the fans and pundits talk about him like he's Messi levels, and the other half are overly critical and think he's like finished at the age of 23. In reality, I think he's a very skillful and very good player that has been unlucky and made the right call returning to Australia and MacArthur, but needs time and patience to develop. And people talking about him getting the call up for the Socceroos, yeah, maybe he should be an outside shout. I guess he is a very good player and he knows Arnold very well. So if he has like 4 or 5 games, I'm not sure how many games there are between now and the World Cup. But I guess if he really sets the league on fire, maybe yeah. Why not? If Goodwin's injured, Tilio's not in form, maybe he should receive a call up. But like people talking about him, like I heard an opinion of someone saying that he's the most talented player at all of Australia. And I think that's a bit over the top, I guess. Yeah, he's a very good dribbler, and people like the naked eye, people that don't deep stuff, that don't look at the tactical side of the game. Yeah, he really looks very, very good when he's dribbling past players. But what happens when he dribbles past like five players and just the ball goes out because the pitch is not big enough.
Yeah, unconfirmed rumours, but whispers on the street are saying that Daniel Arzani is a big fan of the Golden Generation, was listening to our Lucas Aid segment last week to get him a bit pumped up for the Australian Cup final. So big hello to you, Daniel, if you're tuning in. But Tom, your hand was up. What did you want to say?
I think it's a really good point that Petar makes there about how people's perceptions of Arzani are sort of warped by the type of player he is. And I think it comes a lot down to the types of players that people in Australia appreciate. And this isn't a problem, by the way.
Exactly,
yeah. It's not a problem. Like, I'm sure Gerald would have this as well. If you speak to people that, and Harper as well, like, Petar probably not just because he doesn't live here. But when you speak to people that aren't football fans here and they watch, like, a Socceroos game, the players that they always tend to think are really, really good are like Rogic and Arzani and
Mabil
and Boyle and Mabil, because these are the people that like they take people on, they like do all this like
the flairy guys,
the flair sort of players, right? Whereas like, I don't know, if you whacked Sergio Busquets in the midfield for Australia, I mean, it would make Australia a significantly better team, but you'd probably still have people in Australia saying, oh, well, guess what? Busquets isn't doing enough running. Like, why isn't he going and winning the ball? Like, you'd get these sort of really weird opinions just because people's actual perceptions of what is ability, like, and talent, right? Like, these are such buzzwords and don't actually have sort of an affirmed meaning that people just use it. And I think in an Australian context, people just say, like, talent and ability as being able to dribble past someone and being able to do that quite well. Whereas I think there's so much more that goes into it.
I've got no stats or research or anything to back this up, but I think a lot of the football that people consume in Australia is like little highlights clips and FIFA. And I think those two things are massive factors in that little spiel you just gave, Tom, about the flair players being the ones that are really, really appreciated. Like, you think about defenders that are really appreciated, even in world football now. There aren't that many by the kind of just casual football watcher, but you probably had that more last century with your Beckenbauers, et cetera. But Gerald, talk to us about what happened in the on field in the final. So with MacArthur, two penalties for their two goals, but dominated, deserved to win. How do you think they should be feeling coming into the first game of the season against Brisbane on Saturday evening?
Yeah, they did have 32 shots to, I think, Sydney's 6 or 7. So, but in saying that, I don't think Sydney United were bad. They seemed to handle the occasion quite well. And I, as I was saying last week on my own podcast, little shout out, but I thought if Sydney United was going to be overwhelmed by the crowd, there was equalist chance that MacArthur would be overwhelmed by a crowd, because that would have probably been the biggest crowd they played in front of without having a stat sheet up in front of me. But I thought they looked super comfortable. I thought they would be all right, even though Sydney have caused a couple of shocks. MacArthur looked quite good. There's still some holes in that side. I think they're still looking for a second strong sort of central midfielder to help Backus, who has looked really good in his first few games. But overall, a lot of excitement up top with Davila and Arzani. So, I think they should be shifting their focus towards a finals finish. Dwight York came off a really poor season last season, but Dwight York has got a whole bunch of new players at his disposal. So I think it's one of the more talented teams on paper, without maybe having the same like depth of quality as some of the other clubs. But I think they're definitely a final shout, and I think they can definitely get over the top of Brisbane this weekend.
Yeah, speaking about Dwight York, I think one thing it seems like he's done, it looks like he's changed the mood in the team. Like, just watching the interviews after the game, it seems like the team is well-oiled and the guys know what they're going for and what they want. And I like the way they've been set up and, like, almost every game in the cup. They're playing a 4-3-3, a pretty defined formation compared to last season under Milicic, where they switched formations like every second game. So my biggest worry is the fact that they're playing this 4-3, very, very attacking 4-3-3, where they have like one sitting midfielder and the Villa and the Silva playing as the more advanced eights. I think that works against teams that don't really press you in the first phase of build-up, but maybe against teams like Melbourne City that like to press a bit higher, they could have problems.
But Petr, how many teams in the A-League are actually good at pressing?
Yeah, I mentioned that on Twitter. I'm not sure they're much. No, definitely not a lot. If we put City aside,
maybe Central Coast. To be fair, I think that they actually pressed quite well at times last season. But
yeah, an interesting formation as well. Yeah,
yeah. But going on to what you were saying, though, I just want to add to that in terms of, I think I mentioned last week as well that it seems like Dwight York's got them playing with just more autonomy. Like they're not having to just think about what they're having to do all the time. It's like Arzani can get on the ball and he can decide what he wants to do with it. And this is the sort of way you want to use players like Arzani, because for all of Arzani's weaknesses, he's phenomenal at getting the ball up the pitch in terms of his ball carrying ability. What he doesn't do is when he's instructed to sort of play passes in certain areas, to slow down the tempo, to do these sorts of things, because that's not the type of player he is. And that's also one of the reasons, in my opinion, why he didn't succeed in Europe. It's because like they placed such an emphasis, particularly at the clubs he was at, all football-playing sides. There's such an emphasis on keeping the ball and not losing the ball really in a haphazard way, as he has a bit of a tendency of doing. I think you mentioned that there were 32 shots. I wonder how many of those were Arzani shots that end up in Rosette. Like he had a lot of shots from outside the box and not many of them went anywhere near the goal. But I think it's also worth just touching on how good Ulysses Davila was. Absolutely phenomenal performance. And like, given the circumstances that sort of contextualize that in terms of losing his wife in a really tragic way, I think it's just a Herculean effort. And I think everyone really needs to get around Davila. Like, what a story, what a player. Really, really glad for him they got to lift that cup.
So good. Hey, just so touching, all that post-game stuff with Ulysses Davila. But we previewed MacArthur and five other A-League men teams last week. We've got the rotated squad, of course, this week, but I reckon we get into the final six in alphabetical order of these A-League men teams and break them down team by team with some little fun bits in between, of course, as we like to do here on the Golden Generation. But Gerald, shall we start with you? The Newcastle Jets. Tell us what you think about the Newcastle Jets.
Well, Harper, I like the Newcastle Jets. I thought last season, they finished ninth, I think. Like coming into the season, everyone was sort of like touting them to be an underdog and sort of saying they might finish sort of seventh or eighth. So then they actually ended up sort of underperforming, but everyone was predicting them to overperform. So I feel like they actually finished where they should finish. But this time around, they've kept a few players. They've lost a lot of their squad players, and obviously they've lost Daniel Peña as well, which is a huge loss. I think they signed the most important players in Archie Goodwin, and they've signed a lot of really exciting players. I love Piscopo. So I think, although he's not Peña, he's another really sort of exciting midfielder who will definitely feed Mikutadze some goals this season. And I think Brendan O'Neill is a really important signing to slot into that midfield. Still some questions probably around their defence. They did sign Mark Nutter from the Wanderers, who's only young, but really like him. He didn't get a lot of opportunity last year, and I don't know if that was more down to injury or not, but he played a fair bit the season before, and I thought I was seeing some potential there. So whether or not he can break into the team at the start of the season, probably not, but they've got sort of Matt Yerman and Jordan Elsie there. They signed Jenkinson from where did he come from? Forest or something. And he was okay. Yeah, he was okay at City last season. So I think they should be looking at top six. I don't think personally that they'll get there. But I like the way Arthur Pappas sets up that team. And I think that they're definitely another one of those dark horses coming to the season. And interesting as well, whether or not Steins and Timmins can get on the park for them, because I don't know if they really fit, given how many midfielders they've already got and how many they signed. But two guys that I would really like to see get more opportunity.
Yeah, I was just looking over my notes, and I basically have almost the absolute same things that Gerald said here. I think Papas, the way he wants to play football, it's entertaining, but I'm not sure he has the right players to do it. As he mentioned, like, they've obviously made some very impressive signings in the final third, but I'm not convinced by the defense. And overall, I personally see them finishing around the same spot they finished last year. If Mikel Tadze and Biskupo, and it's a big if because Biskupo really, like, in the last three seasons, he's missed like half of the games. So I guess it's a big if, but if those two can get like fit and firing, I think they could be an outside shout for the sixth. But I think they're most likely in the periphery somewhere.
I think one of the things with Newcastle is as well, if you look at them last season, everyone obviously eulogised over them for the way they played football. Didn't exactly get them the best results, but I think the ideology of Pappas is admirable. I think we can agree on that. But the problem is, like, the areas that they've strengthened in their squad are the exact areas that they didn't really need to strengthen from last season. You look at Piscopo, look at, did they bring in Bahaja, I think?
Yeah, they did.
Yes.
Who I think he had the best expected goals and assists per 90 in the entire league last season, but he just can't finish his dinner at all.
Yeah.
So they've brought in like attacking quality. They've added good steel to their midfield with O'Neill, which I think they needed. And they've improved their fullbacks which needed to happen because their fullbacks were absolutely tragic last season. With respect, the big problem is, like, they've still got these slow centre backs that can't play in a high line. Like, the big problem with Newcastle last season was they'd pushed everyone up the pitch so far, and then it's literally like watching Liverpool at the moment. It's like they'd just kick one ball over the top and then the other team would score immediately. Like, it was always really comical, and they'd just like have these games where they concede loads of goals just because watching Yildirim and Elsie try and chase back from the halfway line is like watching an Airbus A380 turn. Like, it just won't happen.
With respect.
So, with respect, of course. But yeah, I think that's a major area of their squad which still is sort of lacking, and I think that'll stop them from competing for finals.
Between teams, so we've wrapped up Newcastle, but not quite yet. We've wrapped up our preview of them. But for each team, we are going to have a quiz. Two questions for each team. So 12 questions on overall. And whoever gets the most points will come out on top as our first Golden Generation quiz champion of the season. So two questions on the Newcastle Jets. First up, your name is your buzzer. Here we go. Let's see how this turns out. Question one. In games that the Newcastle Jets have played there, in the A-League era, the stadium has gone by four different names. Name those four different names.
Tom. Hunter Stadium, McDonald Jones Stadium. No, I can't name the two. I feel like there's a really obvious one I'm missing.
I'm going to have to buzz you out there, Tom. That's unfortunate.
I'm sure there was one that was pretty complicated that I can't remember it.
Gerald, so Tom's got two correct. I think I've got one, which is the Newcastle International Sports Centre.
That is one, but it's never been like known as that, like the official name of it. These are all sponsor names, these ones.
Oh, so okay.
There's two more, and they are Energy Australia Stadium and Ausgrid Stadium.
Yeah, that was the one.
Do I get the points for that? Yeah,
0 points, Tom. 0 points, Tom. Redeem yourself here with question two on the Newcastle Jets. So I like to get a bit wacky with some of my questions. This is prime example. So if you look at the Newcastle Jets squad, they've got five foreigners this season. So how many total colours make up the national flags of all the players in the Newcastle Jets squad?
Oh, wow.
Gerald. Oh, all the foreigners or all the players?
All the players. So obviously there's foreigners and then there's Australians. So
Gerald.
Yeah, Gerald.
Because I couldn't even tell you all their foreigners, I'm just going to have a stab and say, guess, I know they've got the Georgian and everything. I'm going to say 13.
13 is incorrect.
Okay. Can't say I'm surprised.
Tom, I feel like this is a Tom kind of question.
It is definitely a me kind of question. Hold on, I'm calculating it in my brain. Because, okay, Tom, okay.
Tom.
Their foreigners are... Datsmelia, Mikkel Tadze, Jenkinson, and they've got who's the other two? Have they got other randos that I'm just like, they must have one other rando. Okay, but basically, the Georgian flag and the English flag are the same colours. They're both red and white. So we got that. Then we've got white.
Yeah.
White is in the Australian flag. So is red. So... blue, we've got red, white, blue, and I bet I'm missing another foreigner. Oh, Zoot Alor, hold on. Who else is a foreigner at Newcastle?
Can I steal this one?
Yeah, Tom's taken so long. I'm getting Petter. If you answer straight away, you can answer it.
Can I have just ask a question because I'm sure
yep.
James McGarry is considered Irish.
James McGarry is considered Irish, is he?
I think he has a passport, yeah.
Well, I'm saying that James McGarry is not considered Irish.
He's so the, Kiwi.
So three.
It's three.
I'll give the point to Petar Petrov.
Yes.
Three colours.
I stole this one.
Australia, New Zealand, Georgia, and England, or UK, same thing, England, whatever.
Yeah.
And then really they've also got Dane Ingham as well, but I think he's non-visa New spot. Zealand. But anyway, that doesn't matter. Petar Petrov is leading 1-0 as we move on to our second team in the previews. More on quizzes later. But the Perth Glory. Petar, you know what? You got the question right. You can start talking about the Perth Glory. What do you have to say?
Oh, Glory are a bit of a mystery for me, I guess. They probably can't get worse than last year, but I don't really understand the hype around them for most of the fans. Yes, they will play more games at home now that COVID is almost gone. But you still have Zatkovic. I think he's a bit of a question mark. And when you sign like 14 players, I think they signed. You need to get that rhythm. You need to get the players gel. And in a 26 game season, we all know that you don't really have that time. So if I have to give a prediction, I think they'll be pretty far off the top six again.
Tom, concur with that.
Yeah, just because I think you can say the same about Western Sydney as well, who we'll mention later, but when you don't have any continuity, and I understand like the rhythm that Perth had is probably the rhythm you want to lose more than the rhythm you want to maintain, but like it makes it really hard when you're trying to introduce so many new players, and I'll give them credit. Some of these signings actually look quite good. I rate Amini. I think Ryan Williams could be a decent player in the A-League. They've signed, I think, Katrumbis as well as quite a serviceable player. They've signed, but I mean, at the end of the day with Perth, like, it's going to come down to their foreigners. And to be honest, I'm not really sure how Ben Azubel is going to be. He was playing in, like, the second division in Israel. and I'm not sure that that's the greatest league. So... I don't think he'll light up the A-League by any means. And I don't think, I mean, this Salim Khalifi guy that they've got as an injury replacement for Sardinero could be all right. But Beavers and like McKenneth and stuff, I'm just not 100% convinced. I mean, they could surprise me, but I think they'll be towards the bottom of the table once again.
Gerald.
What I would say to Tom is like the lack of continuity. I don't know if it's a valid argument after what we saw from Victory last season. They effectively replaced almost that whole lineup. I don't think Perth is going to be anywhere near the top, to be honest. I've got them finishing last, but I just mean like for the Wanderers or for whatever. Just saying like, obviously Victory brought in a whole new squad and that they gelled together really quickly. So I don't know if it's like that applicable.
I think with Victory though, like a lot of it was Tony Popovich, just like his experience, his nous, his ability to like coach a defense and having all of that. Whereas I just don't think that Zadkovic has really got that in his locker, to be honest.
Yeah, Petr, what do you think of Zadkovic, Petr?
Yeah, just on the point that Gerald made, I think with Victory was a bit like back to the roots. Like they signed Gary Speranovic, Davidson, all players with a lot of experience, and Berlante as well. So with Glory, it's a bit different. Like most of their signings have probably never stepped foot in Australia. So I think that could be a problem. About Zadkovic, I think he reminds me a bit of Carl Robinson. I think he talks the talk, but not sure he can walk the walk, especially like considering what I said about like all these new signings. If you're Tony Popovich and you have his reputation and like you instantly get players' respect just by having this reputation in the league. And with Zadkovic, he has like loads of senior players, and sometimes with players at the age above like 31, 32, they just don't respect you the way like the youngsters do. And the fact that he had success with the young kids at Perth, like it has nothing to do with the senior team. And yeah, he could be a good coach. I don't know. I admit I don't know, but I think he'll probably have a hard time at least at the beginning.
Shall we move on to the quiz for the Perth Glory? Unless anyone's got anything else to say, Tom, very enthusiastic nod there. Look, time calm to redeem yourself down, get composed and steady for the second round of the Golden Generation quiz today. So, question one out of two for Perth Glory. Darryl Latchman has earned more than 30 caps for which national team?
Tom. Curaçao.
Curaçao is correct. Much to the dismay and chagrin of the other two in this little podcast studio we've got going on here. So Tom levels the score with Petr. Gerald, chasing both of them, marooned at the bottom on zero, but we can make up ground in question two here. So this season, as we all know, Perth, they're going to be playing at Macedonia Park, the famous Macedonia Park. Famous for being the former stadium of the now defunct Perth Kangaroos football team. So my question for you is, which league did the Perth Kangaroos play their one and only season in?
I don't know. No idea.
Not a clue.
Not a clue. Okay, well, look, I think every question in my mind is a Tom Williams kind of question. Clearly not this one. The answer is the Singapore Premier League.
Oh, my God.
There you go. They tried to get into the NSL, but they weren't allowed in, and Singapore Premier League was their little audition. But financially, they dominated the league, but financially, they went bust. So, yeah, that question went a bit bust, didn't it? Was there really about Perth Glory?
They tried to go where, sorry, Harper?
They tried to get into the NSL.
Oh, okay.
WA was keen on having a team, but they weren't allowed in straight away, so had their little trial run in the Singapore Premier League. And then a couple of years later, Perth Glory came along into the NSL. But there you go. Enough of trivia about their Perth Kangaroos. You probably won't ever hear about them again for the rest of your life. So we'll move on to Sydney FC, and let's preview them. Tom, would you like to get started, kick us off?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Sydney, I think with Sydney, this season is such a season of expectation for them. They've made some quite good signings, I think, in terms of their foreign players, certainly better foreign players than a lot of the other clubs have made. And I think that's just because Sydney are on sort of an uneven playing field in that they've got the lure of the harbour. They've got they can sell that dream to foreign players, whereas you've got teams like Central Coast, teams like Perth that are having to scrape the sort of deepest embers and tunnels of the Portuguese second tier and stuff to go and find their foreign players. Whereas Sydney are signing like genuinely established players. Like Joe Lolley played minutes for Forest last season in a promotion campaign. So with Sydney, though, they've also got the expectations of them moving back into the SFS. Obviously, the fan base will be expecting them to improve after last season because they're a club that demands high standards, and they've been at those high standards for a few seasons now. So it was kind of I feel like some people expected it, but it was sort of unexpected to see them fall so drastically last season. And I think the pressure is massively mounting on Steve Corica to fix it all. I think they've got a lot of flexibility in their team. I really think on paper their starting 11 looks good, but they lack a bit of depth. If someone like Braddon or someone like even one of their foreigners like Lolly or Mac go down. What I like about their team, though, is that they've just got quality everywhere on the park. You look at the attack, Lafondra, Mac, Lolly, that midfield has the potential to be phenomenal irrespective of who they play there, right? Like, we know how much they missed Braddon last season. I think he's, on his day, the best midfielder in the league. And you chuck him back in there with Caceres and Yazbek or even Burgess if they want to go all vibes. They can do that. Rodwell even signing as a defender, by the looks of it, looks to be a good signing. So they've got a lot to live up to this season. Whether they actually do or not is a different thing. And I think that'll be interesting to see.
Petter, will they live up to the expectations of their fans and the league?
Yeah, I think with Sydney, it could be anything this season, to be fair. The pressure is there to perform, and the recruitment has been good, as Tom said. I think also the switch of formation from Corica makes a lot of sense. They needed that change. I think most teams and coaches just got used to them, and that was a problem, especially when Barton wasn't there. I think he's a very, very important player for them, and it will be very important as well to see how he recovers from the injury. I think he missed probably just about a year. So at the age of 32, he'll need time, definitely. But with Yazbek and Trete and Burgess and Caceres, I think they have the personnel, at least for the start of the season, to replace him. But yeah, I think it will be interesting. I actually rate Corica slightly more than most people. I think he's done a pretty decent job in Sydney as a whole. And last season, it was an underperformance, but it was a very different season to any other. So I think he deserved another goal. Yeah, overall, his squad is pretty strong. So if he underperforms, I won't be surprised if he's fired. But I think he definitely deserves a goal. And especially with the new signings and the likes of Segicic and Kucharski coming through the ranks, I think he has enough depth to challenge, maybe not for the first place, but definitely the top three. And the other thing I want to mention is I don't think there's been enough talk about Segicic. I think he's been their best player in the whole of preseason. And if he's given a chance, I think his ceiling is somewhere around Tilio levels.
They'd absolutely love to get off to a flying start, especially that game against Melbourne Victory, because they want to fill up their stadium, their new stadium, their flashy new thing as much as they can throughout the season, no doubt. But quiz time, I think, boys. Round three, currently. Tom,
here we go.
Petter locked at 1 point each. Gerald is fired up. Okay, let's get to question one for Sydney FC. Of course, they finished eighth in the A-League table last season. That was the first time they'd missed the finals since when?
Gerald. 2015-16 season, I believe.
2015-16 is correct. Sure. And levels the scores. Very well done. Question two. Federal Nomad is an anagram of which Sydney FC player's name?
Gerald.
Gerald Lynch.
I'm going to take a stab here, and I'm pretty confident now that I've thought about it. I think it's Adam Lafondra.
Adam Lafondra is correct, and he's got ahead.
Come on. Come from the deck.
What a comeback.
That was really well done. That was well done. That was a huge effort.
He's turned the game on his head.
That's a good question.
Adam Lafondra, another anagram of Adam Lafondra, deformed anal. So there you go. But we'll move on to the Wellington Phoenix as Gerald Kives calms himself down, gets back
really
into
sort of getting
mode.
Hot and heavy in this room, guys. Yeah. I don't know if it's Melbourne weather or just the excitement of the night, but
the adrenaline was pumping. Yeah, I could feel it all the way from North Coburg. But yeah, anyway, the Wellington Phoenix. Tom, I think this is you that's putting our notes here. Potential to be a proper vibes team. Tell us why.
Just because if you look at the way that Talai wants his teams to play, it's always actually quite entertaining. And like the difference between Talai and Arthur Pappas is Talai actually wins games. So like when you look at how Wellington have been playing in the last couple of seasons, like they score goals, they play a way that everyone enjoys. And they just haven't.
They concede a lot of goals.
They concede a lot of goals. It's as I said, it's literally Pappas, but they win games. but in the past, they haven't actually had like very good players on their team. I think this season there is potential for that to change. Look at their midfield. They signed Stephen Ugarkovic, big signing. He'll either get paired probably with Clayton Lewis or Pennington. I think they played Lewis and Pennington as a partnership a bit last season. I think Petar will agree with me here. It was a bit of a useless partnership. Like they were really bad. So having Ugarkovic there is more of a ball winner, does a bit of dirty work, but also is quite tidy on the ball, is big for them. I think, again, though, it's just another team where it comes down to the unproven foreigners. I think Petar's countrymen probably... local neighbor in Plovdiv, is it Bozhidakraev? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, exactly.
he looks like he could be good. So does this Jan Sass dude. They also signed Barbarousis, so another proven A-League player, but I think a lot of it comes down to how Kraev and Sass and these types will perform, and Zawada, the Polish dude as well.
Can you tell us a little bit about our Bulgarian mate, Petar Bozhidakraev, because, look, I think it would be silly of us not to ask our resident Bulgarian about the A-League's resident Bulgarian.
Yeah, I could probably say a lot of things about him. I followed him, like, since he was a Yale team player in Botev Braca. And he was definitely considered, at one point, he was considered the best young prospect in Bulgaria.
The Arzani of Bulgaria.
The hype was similar, but his playing style was very different. He's definitely not that good at dribbling. He is a tidy dribbler, but with time his frame changed, his body changed, and he got a lot taller, so he had to adapt his game. Earlier on, he was the type of like fast, quick winger. Now he's more of a Havertz type of footballer, number 10, if I can compare him to a more famous guy. But I think his problem at one point was his attitude. I think he thinks very, very highly of himself, and that was a problem at one point. He was talking a lot of bullshit on interviews after international games, and Bulgarian fans are a bit like they don't like a lot of talking, especially when you don't perform on the pitch, and that's the reason why he hasn't been called up for the national team for a while now. But I think in terms of potential, I don't want to say big things, but I think if he wants and can stay in the A-League, he's in terms of potential. I think he's Ninkovic levels.
Ninkovic levels. Wow, Tom,
that's a big call.
The shocked expression there.
best foreigner to ever play in the A-League levels.
I mean, if he gets it going.
Wow.
But yeah, the other thing I want to say, I maybe want to keep it for the big call stuff, but I think Wellington are set for a big season. I would say that Jugakovic and Lewis, if the two of them are fit, I think that's the best midfield partnership in the league, together with Berlante and Marchand.
Tom looks like an emoji the way hangs his eyes in shock. But Gerald, hand well, up there.
Yeah, you've gone back to back big calls there, Petter, which obviously I love anyway. But
losing them up early.
They are an interesting side. I feel like it's very easy to just shove them. When you're making your A-League table prediction, it's very easy to sort of go, oh, you know, they're out in wherever they play in New Zealand. And I kind of always slot them down towards my bottom four, because I just sort of always look at the other clubs and I'm more sort of like comfortable and know them better and their players and push them higher up. But Wellington haven't really gone backwards at all in terms of what they've lost in games. It's pretty much a net neutral, and they're well coached and everything. But yet I haven't really seen them in anybody's top six predictions. They're very, like, just not really seeing them.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're not in mine, so a bit hypocritical.
Yeah, well, there's undoubtedly probably a bit of, well, not probably, definitely undoubtedly a bit of bias from the Australian media when it comes to Wellington Phoenix just about every season, I reckon. But
yeah, definitely.
I'll tell you what, there's no bias for, because this is just straight facts, our quiz. We'll move on to round four of the quiz. Gerald has got the advantage after that huge Sydney FC round. He's on 2 points and Tom and Petter on one. So question one for Wellington. You've got to get both correct here to garner a point from this question. Who wears number one and who wears number two for Wellington?
Peter.
Petter.
Wait, no, number one? Do they have a number one? I'm pretty sure their keepers had different kids. Oh, shit.
I guess it
has to be Olisao, because he was 20, but surely he's changed.
So you're saying Olisao for number one, and are you saying anything for number two?
Wooten?
Incorrect.
Scott Wooten?
My sound effect is shit itself, but...
Gerald?
Did I get at least one?
I can't reveal that. Gerald?
Can I go out on a strange limb here and say that they don't actually have a number one or a number two?
It's correct.
Come on. I was trying Gerald's to think about... Role. I know Sale wears 20 and then that other keeper wears like a really high number.
Yeah, like Alex Paulson or whatever. That's who I was going to say.
Wears like a 30-something or something like that. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, let me check. Mm. Yeah, 40.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. That was quick.
Yeah.
No number one. No number two. I think it shows that Petter might have had the list up there.
No,
that's what I was alluding to, but...
I have put more potent on my computer. Clicked on the Wellington Phoenix.
But question two for the Wellington Phoenix. This one's the closest to the pin one. I don't expect you to get it bang on the money, or I'll be very impressed if you do. Closest to the pin. What is the distance in kilometres from Wynn Stadium in Wollongong, where Wellington have played many of their games recently, from Wynn Stadium Wollongong to Sky Stadium in Wellington?
Gerald, since we're all going to have a crack anyway, we're all having a guess, right? And it's closest wins?
Yep.
Okay, I'll just go in first. I thought you were going to ask about the distance derby, and I don't actually remember that figure either, but I think from... wouldn't be that long. I'm going to say like 650 kilometres.
Okay, 650 is incorrect, but it's closest to the pin, of course, so he could still get the point. Who's going next?
Yeah, don't go for it. I'm still thinking.
Game of chess here.
I'm going to go 427.
427 kilometres, Tom Williams says. Petter, what do you
say? I'd say 876.
876 kilometres. I can tell you it's about 888 kilometres from Melbourne to Sydney. So from Wollongong to Wellington is 2,222 kilometres.
Surely nobody gets that.
Gets the point. He's closest to the pin. He's played it very well tactically there. So, Petter, what's that? That puts you on 2 points, Gerald on 3, and Tom on 1. Oh, we're getting to the pointy end of the quiz now, but we've got to save the last two rounds. So after we complete these last two previews, Western Sydney is up next. Gerald, tell us what you think about Western Sydney.
Yes.
Very different side to what they had last season, but much hope, as there always is.
It's a very different side, and I think, like last year, I remember all the hype around that midfield. They had Keanu Backus, they had Steven Ugarkovic coming in, Rodwell had signed, Dimi Petratos was there, Troisi was there, and one more. I feel like I'm, I guess, skipping over there, but literally every single one of their midfielders from last season has parted ways with the club, and they brought in a whole new list, which also looks pretty promising. I mean, Oli Bazanic's a big one. Something down there in the F3 which makes players just not want to play until they get a move to the Wanderers. So we'll see how it works out for Oli Bazanic. It didn't really work for Ugarkovic. Milos Nikovic is obviously a huge signing. At his age, I don't really know. But he's still been good for Sydney, so I think they'll get a year or two out of him, and just the shithousery factor puts the transfer up for me already quite a bit. And they've signed good players all over the pitch. What's that guy's name? The French midfielder. That's the one, yeah. I've got it in front of me. I just didn't know how to pronounce it, so thanks, Petter. But, yeah, I like this squad, and I like Mark Rudan as a manager, strictly, and think that this squad has potential to play finals, but I'm also very aware that it's been a long time for the Wanderers and they seem kind of cursed. But I like the squad. I think they should be playing finals. I'm hoping that they're going to pack their stadium out a bit more this season as well, because it's been pretty dire scene down there, sort of 4,000 or 5,000 crowds. I think if Sydney are up and about and performing, hopefully it lifts the Wanderers to do the same. And I think I've also forgotten their biggest signing, Marcelo, who I think will be fantastic for them. And I've got them sort of finishing in like a 4-6 type spot, I reckon.
Yeah, I'm sort of the same, to be fair. I think, like I sort of mentioned before, I'm really interested to see how Rudan goes with this pretty much entirely new squad of players. But the quality that they've signed is just immense, like across the pitch, everywhere. You mentioned Marcelo there. Looks like he's going to be really good. But even you look at the proven A-League quality that they've signed, I feel like that should sort of be some sort of catchphrase of this podcast. Proven A-League quality. I mean, it's almost like ironic in some senses, but anyway. like the son Yengi up top, proven A-League quality. And the son Bazanic in midfield, proven A-League quality right there.
Lawrence Thomas.
Yeah, Lawrence Thomas as well, proven A-League quality. Milos Ninkovic, proven A-League quality. Like, we've got all these players across the pitch that are proven A-League quality. The big thing that's going to decide whether they're a sort of mid-table team or whether they're a team that's going to be challenging the likes of Melbourne City, Western United, Melbourne Victory for the title are whether these foreigners live up to their names. Nofitano, Gamboto, I think is how you pronounce it, as well. He looks like he could be decent. These types of guys, and also Brandon Borrello as well, another proven A-League quality right there, albeit a few years ago now. So they've got quality all over the pitch. I think they've got really good potential. I think the fullback's a bit sus. I'm not actually the biggest fan of Traore. I'm not sure whether Gabriel Clerc is amazing. I haven't really seen a lot of him. Tate Russell can play there as well, but he's not phenomenal either. So, yeah, I think that's probably an issue, but yeah, it'll be really interesting to watch them, and I think the league really needs Western Sydney to perform this season especially.
Petter.
Just quickly, sorry, Tom.
Yeah. Sorry, Gerald, you go for it.
Obviously, like, you prefer to Yengi as a proven A-League talent, which I'm not saying he's not, but how many goals do you reckon, if he gets through the whole season, how many goals do you think he can score? Because obviously he hasn't got a full run at Adelaide yet, and I'm interested. Do you think he could reach double figures?
100%. I think he is the best young striker in Australia. I think he's so, so, so good. And injuries have really held him back. And he's older than you'd think as well, just because it feels like he hasn't actually played that much at A-League level. I think he's like probably 23 now.
He's 20.
Yeah. So, but I really rate him as a player, not only because of his goal scoring, but he does so much in terms of like holding the ball up, winning the ball in the air. And it's really rare that you have someone who's like as physically big and powerful as he is. It's actually got like technical ability. So I think he's got big potential. He's obviously got that guy, Kurpic, the Bosnian dude that they've signed. He'll challenge him. They could probably play them up top together, I'd imagine, as well, if they just want to go 4-4-2. But, yeah, I really rate Yenga. I think he can definitely hit double figures in an A-League season if he stays fit.
Boys, quiz time.
Here we go.
round five. And the tension is mounting. The tension is getting higher and higher. Jeez, this... you could cut it with a knife, as they say. But question one for Western Sydney. But just a little update. I think we've got Gerald on 3, Petter on 2, and Tom on 1. Tom, floundering at the bottom. The unexpected struggles of Tom Williams. Let's see if he can
make a La Remontada, boys. La Remontada. This is like Barca v PSG.
Question one for Western Sydney. So we asked when the last time Sydney FC missed finals was. When was the last time Western Sydney made finals?
Gerald? I think it was the same season, 15-16.
15-16 is incorrect.
Peter,
go for it.
14, I'll say 14.
14-15?
13-14.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's incorrect either way.
Sorry. You've given Tom a bit of help.
Tom!
I am. Tom. He needs it.
It was the last season they played at Pirtek, I think. So I think 2016-17.
2016-17 is correct. Very nicely done, Tom Williams. And he claws his way back. Let's see if he can become level with the leader, Gerald, with question two for Western Sydney. Very simple one. How old is Milos Ninkovic?
Gerald.
Tom just beat Gerald to it.
37.
He was born on Christmas Day in 1984. Man, he's 37.
Yeah, that was my guess as well.
Back
well done.
On the money, Tom Williams levels the scores with Gerald Lynch. Tom on 3, Gerald on 3, Petter on 2. But
I'm
it's Western United up next. So if I don't win this, I'll be very ashamed. But we'll see.
It could be, yeah. Petter still has a chance himself, even though he's at the bottom there. But let's preview Western United before we get into the
hold
quiz.
On. Is Petter, is Petter Petrov donning the Western United colours this evening?
He is. He's got the...
yes.
He's got the.
It's a Bulgarian national team kit.
Very nice. I was going to say, it looks a bit like the Bulgarian Bentley Greens. we'll make sure to put a clip on the socials at TGG Football so people can see that lovely jacket of yours, Petter. But, Gerald, I think it's only fair if we let you take the reins for our Western United preview first up. So, go for it.
Well, look, in my predictions, I actually had them fourth, but the more I think about it, I'm thinking they might be a little bit harsh because they've got the smallest turnover of any squad. They got rid of 3 players, so... Vuitsa and Skitardis are both jetted off to MacArthur and have just won a bit of silverware, so congratulations to them. The other one they got rid of was Rene Crin, who, although looked to be a good player, didn't actually have a huge impact on Western season last year. So they've really gone up by bringing in James Troisi and Jacob Trapp, proven A-League players, who I don't know how much they'll get out of Troisi. Hopefully not that much. If Diamante's fit, we won't have to see him that often. That's a bad thing. I just obviously would prefer to have Diamante out there. And the big signing is Tongo Dumbia, who from all reports has been killing it in preseason. Gives Western a real selection headache when it comes to that midfield because you want to fit Lustekarin, you want to fit Kilkenny in as well. So that's it really in terms of changes. And it's a bit boring for fans, but like if we've just come off a championship, you don't mind keeping all the same players again. So I don't think a lot has to change. I think Imai will play a lot more this season as a centre-back, which will push Topol Stanley out because Risden missed a majority or like half of last season. So then things will look a little bit different with Risden slotting back in, Imai taking his spot again. I'm sure he will over Topol Stanley just because of his age and everything. LaCroix and Garucho are fantastic. Young was good. So it should be another season of contending. I think they'll be around 3-4 just because I really like City and Victory this season. But look, everything looks really good. And it's a good chance for them to back it up and go back-to-back very early in their history.
Tom, obviously they went on that finals run to claim the championship last season, but I know they didn't really impress you throughout the regular season, as at least their performances weren't really, or their position wasn't really reflective of their performances on the table, because they were top two for most of the season. But do you think that they should improve the season, or do you think they'll be the same, or do you think they'll get worse? Obviously not much turnover, like Gerald said.
I think they'll be pretty similar. I've got them in second. I think for a lot of last season, during the regular season, especially at the start of the season when they were snicking all those like one goal wins with like the 1-0s and the 2-1s, I felt that that was quite unsustainable. But then we saw Prijović come in and just completely wreck the league, to be honest, like pretty much single-handedly won Western United the title. His performances in finals were about as good as I've ever seen any player perform in this league, to be honest. It was just absolutely immense. And then having that rear guard, which just stood so strong for the whole of the season. And it wasn't just even Imai and in Lacroix. It was also Young in goal, who was amazing. Risden and Garuccio were really, really good overlapping fullbacks. Like, the whole team just gelled really well together. Deserving winners of the title last season, I thought. And I think this season, I just can't see how they get any worse. I think I've said quite a few times, they've managed to strengthen a title-winning side. And they made the biggest move of the transfer window by keeping Prijović, because just in terms of what he is to Western United, they're just so, so, so much better when he's in the team, because he's, like we saw in the finals last season, he just scores. Like, he scores from set pieces, he scores when the ball's just bobbling around, his finishing is ridiculous. Like, he's got these, like, just when the ball's bouncing around, he'll just shoot the ball towards the goal and it'll go in. It's like watching Haaland. Like, it's a variety of finishes that he's got at his disposal. And they've got Diamante coming back from injury. I don't know how much Diamante will play. I think there's a potential to play Lockie Whale, sort of that second striker, number 10. He played a bit last season as well. They've got the flexibility to do that. They've got good depth of the bench. They can play Troisi as a number 10 if they want. This is just, I think it's a really, really good team. I haven't seen much of Tongo Doumbia, but from all accounts, he seems like he could be pretty good. And as Gerald rightfully mentioned there, the proven A-League players, the Palps, as I'm going to call them, they've got a few of them as well. So, yeah, really backing in Western to challenge for the title again, I reckon.
Well, that's the preview done, and it all comes down to this as the smile spread throughout the podcast studio here. We're on to our final round of the quiz. We've got Tom, Gerald on three, Petter on two, one behind. but, yeah, the important thing is that anyone can win as we head into our Western United round. But I think everyone would have a favourite. It's the man in the bottom right of my screen, G. Lynch. But let's get to question one. Name the six stadiums Western United has played at.
Gerald.
In the A-League. Gerald.
Home games, obviously.
Home games, yeah, of course.
Six stadiums, three seasons. What a ride it's been. I'm going to go in chronological order as I remember it. GMHBA Stadium in Geelong, Amy Park, Mars Stadium, UTAS in Tasmania. They played one at Morsehead Park in Ballarat last season. There's one more, and I'm one more on the tip of my tongue here.
He's teetering.
Wintonoval, Footscray, season one, Australia Day versus Adelaide United. That will cap it off, I'd say, Harper.
That would cap it off indeed, Gerald.
That's very impressive.
Nervous moments.
Oh, tell you what. And I've only been, a little bit of trivia, I've only actually been to four of those. Didn't go to Morsehead, never been to UTAS. So there you go.
Yeah, right. There you go. Tom was looking to pounce there on the Wintonoval one when it was on the tip of your tongue. But that knocks Petter out of contention. You can still answer if you want, Petter. You'll spoil the tension, but you can go for it. So Gerald on four, Tom on three, Petter on two. Final question. UTAS Stadium, which we mentioned, it's 448.47 kilometres from the proposed Wyndham City Stadium that hopefully Western United's going to move into. So as the crow flies, if you're going from Wyndham to Utah Stadium, in which ordinal direction are you traveling?
Tom.
Ordinal direction.
Is this just as generic as, like, as in?
Have a crack.
Is it just south?
Gerald.
Look, okay, I'm not going to buzz Tom out, so Gerald can go next. I'll say it's not south. It's more specific than south.
I would have said southeast because you're going from the west to the bottom right of screen.
Is that your answer, Gerald, to claim the title?
That is my answer, Harper.
The tension. Oh my God. It's correct. Oh,
there it is.
Too good.
Beovic level performance.
Shows up in the big games. I mean, what can I say?
We've got some victory music for you here. That's it for the quiz, but fun doesn't stop because now it's time for the segment that's been dangled all throughout the show, the big call. So we've got one each. Tom, let's start with you.
Melbourne victory will go the 2022-23 season invincible.
Wow.
Ooh.
Do you actually believe that, Tom?
Yes.
Okay. Leave it at that. Matter of fact, Gerald, that is a huge call. Is yours as gargantuan?
It's a hard one to follow, Harper. It really is. I'm going to go more of a headline you won't see this season. Macedonia Park sells out. I think they'll struggle to get 2,000 people to their games this year. I mean, who's going out there? Maybe the first one, but I just don't see it happening, unfortunately, for the Glory.
Yeah, I agree with that, to be honest. But Petter, you're a big call. You've, like I said before, you've dangled a few throughout the show. So what's your big call?
Yeah, I'll go with the biggest one. Patrick Kisnobo won't finish the season as head coach of Melbourne City.
Wow.
Wow. Okay.
Is that because he's taking over Arnie for the Socceroos or because he's getting sacked?
No. No, the second one.
Okay. Patrick Kisnobo won't finish the season as Melbourne City coach. And we made some predictions there, some very ambitious predictions. But we're looking ahead to round one of the A-League season, of course, and it all kicks off on Friday night. As I get up the fixtures here, give me one sec. I'll restart my computer before, so I've lost it. It all kicks off on Friday night with Melbourne City against Western United, Amy Park. We've got Brisbane, MacArthur, Central Coast, Newcastle, and Sydney Victory on Saturday, and then Wellington versus Adelaide and Western Sydney versus Perth on Sunday. What should we be expecting for this weekend? A little prediction for any of the games or anything that's going to happen?
I have never been more sure of a result in my entire life than the Big Blue. Melbourne Victory kickstarting their invincible season and their road to the gold toilet seat. I have never been more sure of that game being a nil all draw in my entire life. Just because... Okay. It's the first, like, everyone knows how the A-League works. Anytime there's a big game, it just ends up being shit because you've got people watching it on free-to-air, you've got all the people that have been like, oh, soccer sucks, no one scores, and then all these people get ended up proving right when the game's just absolutely drab and, like, nothing actually happens during the game. Like, our last season, first round of the season, Sydney Derby at CommBank. I think it was the first like Sydney Derby at CommBank with like full fans.
I think I fell asleep on that game.
That just about wraps us up for episode 2 of the Golden Generation with this rotated squad. So that wraps us up for speaking. But of course, there is that song that I mentioned in the intro of the show that we'll be playing in just a sec. But before I get to that, Petter, first to you. Thank you for coming in at very late notice. Appreciate your insights as always. Appreciate the stop, enjoy your life sign you got there. And most of all, appreciate the Bentley, the Bulgarian Bentley Greens jacket. Love it.
thanks for having me. I enjoyed this as well.
Thanks very much, mate. And Gerald, your debut, very impressive. We'll see you soon. It could be as a panellist or it could be when you're filling in for me as host because that's the that's what we've worked out this season. When I'm not here, Gerald's going to be in the host seat. So, Gerald, thanks for coming on, mate. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
and stick around to hear this song. And as always, Tom, always a pleasure working with you, Matt. Thanks for coming on.
Indeed. Always a pleasure, Harper. And thanks, Gerald and Petter. It was always a pleasure having you guys on as well.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you all very, very much. And look, thank you guys for tuning in. Don't tune out just yet because there is this song. And we did our A-League season review last season when we were all on the Kickcast. But, of course, it's the season preview. So, to the tune of an Ed Sheeran song that many know and many love, this song is simply called The A-League. Fresh start, blank slate for Nico out at Combank. Burbridge, sour taste. Sturridge gone, no sweat, cause Perth's got Luka Vanovic. Big shoes to fill on the bench. Sorry Luke, just a joke, but O'Neill and Piscopo are at the Jets' finals hopes. Overseas at the Knicks, Talay signed Jugarkovic, could help him stay in the six. And they say new season of A-League kicking off this week. Chock-a-block with signings exciting, like Manny, Austin and Arzani, who's joining the Bulls army. The fans scream and whack their cowbells vigorously, cause we're all pumped to paramount. Quality has never been in doubt, but even better, go outside and buy a ticket for you and a couple mates. Bring this big press back through Aussie gates. Get down and support your side, and the A-League will fly. A-League will fly.